Our next speaker, Tobias, is a German free software advocate, former member of the GNOME Foundation's board of directors, and Pythonista. He acquired a master's degree in security and forensic computing and a PhD in decentralized PKIs. He's working as an IT security consultant and loves to build and break stuff, especially making security systems usable and bringing them to the masses. The talk is Unlocked, Recovering Files Taken Hostage by Ransomware, and Tobias is going to explain to us how to decrypt files hijacked by Black Basta, the second most used ransomware in Germany. Please give a warm welcome and huge round of applause to Tobias.
Right. Let me use this. Is this any better?
Yes.
Woohoo! Excellent. What a great start. I wonder whether anybody sabotaged our operations here. Well, I'm excited to be here. We'll be talking about decrypting files encrypted by, Germany's second most used ransomware through a flaw in their cryptography. So, first, I want to briefly talk about ransomware, a bit more in general, say. Then I want to talk about the Black Basta ransomware in particular. And then I want you to take away that despite decryptors being available, you should really try to protect yourself from ransomware in the first place. Sure, now there's one more decryptor available, or there will be, because after the talk, we will upload everything to GitHub. But there's about 100 ransomware groups, and if you're not prepared for an incident, then it may very well hit you. Ransomware. Ransomware usually infects your organization, encrypts your files, exfiltrates them to the gangsters' infrastructure, and then they want money from you. They want you to pay a ransom, usually for two reasons. The first reason being, for you to decrypt your files so that you can access your files again and, run your infrastructure. And the second reason they want money is to not publish the files. So this double extortion technique has been very popular in the past and has proven to be very successful for these ransomware crews. You may decide to pay up. You may decide to pay the ransom because, after all, it may be less expensive than recovering the files and restoring all your infrastructure. But you don't have any guarantees, right? If they don't deliver their end of the deal, then, good luck suing them. Even if you do pay up and restore your infrastructure, you will need to secure your infrastructure against the next threat that is coming. Because there are so many, threat actors out there that because you have been pwned already once, it's quite likely that the next crew will own your whole network, the next time, the next week. The damages these ransomware gangs incur are most obviously the direct payment for the ransom, right? If you pay up, then this is the most obvious damage that you have. But of course, you're also losing your data. And you will have to rebuild the data that you have lost, your virtual machines, your databases, everything you will need to somehow get from backups or, restore through other means. The media may not appreciate that you've been breached. Usually, these ransomware gangs, they are quite vocal about who they have breached and who they have attacked and what files they have extracted. And you may suffer from reputational damage given all the files that are exposed. And in any case, I'm saying it for the third time now and then I stop, you will need to rebuild your infrastructure and harden it in any case to prevent the next incident. So I think it's quite smart to think about IT security before bad things happen. Of course, when things have happened, it's easy to see the necessity, but it's way cheaper to protect against threats before anything happens. As for the victims, many organizations have fallen victim to ransomware, organizations that are big and well-staffed and that should probably know better. One of the relatively well-known incidents was the Maersk incident, which technically was not really ransomware because NotPetya actually destroyed data without any possibility to recover the data, but they were not operational for weeks, and it cost them a lot of money. ABB, big Swiss company, hundreds of thousands of people work for this organization, IT-driven organizations, defense contractors, defense companies, many big, well-staffed organizations fall victim to ransomware. These ransomware attacks, they are following oftentimes a typical pattern. So somehow they get an initial foothold in your infrastructure, either through public scans, right? You're using Shodan, just normal stuff that everybody else can do, no magic involved. They send phishing emails, they do a reconnaissance phase, trying to target your employees, getting information from LinkedIn or public registers, your website, and then they try to somehow infect one machine in your organization. Once inside, they gain privileges, they look for further credentials to roam around your network, to identify services, identify data, and there have been reports of these attacks happening within 20 minutes or so, from a regular user to domain admin in almost no time. And especially now during the holiday season, well, probably the alerting chain, the chain of command is not as good as during normal times, say. So these attacks, they can come and execute their bat payload very quickly. So once they've identified all the data that looks valuable, appears to be interesting, they exfiltrate the data to their own infrastructure, and then, well, with the aim, of course, to then threaten with a publication. And to increase the pressure on your organization, oftentimes, but not always, they delete all the backups and they encrypt the data. So we've also seen incidents where they don't necessarily delete and encrypt everything, but it, of course, increases the pressure on you to pay the ransom if you cannot access your data. The Black Buster crew in particular has been around since April last year, 2022, and it evolved as a Conti, or from the former Conti group. Conti, they disappeared over the war against the Ukraine, with the Conti members leaking their internal documentation and programs and everything. And then, well, hackers gonna hack. The former Conti members, they did their own thing, and some of them did Black Buster. In these good one and a half years, they have published 320 breaches on their own website, on the darknet, on their Onion page. That's quite a lot, I think. And this is the absolute lower bound, right? This does not include the organizations that have paid up. So, because, I mean, part of the deal for paying the ransom is that you are not being listed on their webpage. So this is the absolute minimum number of hacks that they have performed. Journalists have researched the payments, and they have found that there have been at least $100 million in payments to their Bitcoin addressees. So it's quite a big organization, I would say. $100 million turnover is quite a bit, I would say. And of course, I don't know how much it costs to operate ransomware, but I guess there's quite a bit of margin in the operations there. It has been dubbed earlier this year, in about April, it has been dubbed the second most used ransomware in Germany because they targeted quite a lot of victims in Germany. They do not only target the common Windows environment, they also target virtualization infrastructure, in particular ESXi machines, and many other ransomware crews do, but they do as well. A data point that's interesting for us for later is that currently there's version 2, and there used to be Black Buster version 1 up until November last year. And back then, they used RSA-based encryption. And then they changed to something more modern, right? It's 2023, or in this case, it was 2022. And they upgraded their cryptography, or so they thought, to use elliptic curve-based cryptography. There has been a downtime of the breaches in about September. We know quite well why that is. It's not due to us, unfortunately. But despite this gap there in September, they publish a breach about every other day or every third day. if you take the average of the last 6-7 months. So it's quite an active crew, despite their age and all the things that have happened. It's quite a threat. I want to go through the cybering process, and I will demonstrate how to cyber yourself, how it looks like when you get infected and when all your data gets encrypted. I'm using a sample that you can take from GitHub. It's a relatively current sample. It's from this version 2. You can download and execute it yourself. But I mean, I think it goes without saying that you should not run it on your production environment, right? But you never know. It's late and holiday season. People may not be thinking clearly. So please don't do it on your real ESXi server running real workloads. It's actually not too interesting. You see, I have a gigabyte file, which is resembling our virtual disk image. And then I'm running Chrome EXE, which is the actual malware. And then it takes a little while. You see already the instructions README text appearing there. And after a little while, when it's finished, it'll pop up the ransom note asking you to, well, log on to their website, enter this ID, so that they can identify who you are, and then you get to, well, negotiate with them about how much they think you should pay up, or you should pay for the ransom. Once the encryption is finished, you will see this ransom note, this instructions readme.txt, and you will see that the file has gotten slightly larger, about 314 bytes larger than it used to be. And you see that it has a dedicated extension, and well, they target the per victim, right? So every victim gets their own dedicated piece of malware with their own encryption keys, and in this case, their own file extension and the own ID that you've seen just before. And these 314 extra bytes, they are for this information, for who you are and the state of the encryption and everything. Looking at the encrypted file, I should have said that the file for demonstration purposes, contained all zeros. So it's just the payload of all zeros for simplicity. And before, I actually included how to do that in Windows because I thought it was amazing how difficult Windows makes it to create a file of just zeros, but I skipped that for brevity. So you see the file contents there, and you can see two things. Or maybe you cannot because it's the contrast is quite bad, but I'll tell you what you see. So first of all, you see that there's plain text in between, right? Or rather, there's ciphertext in between the plain text. So the ransomware, the malware, does not encrypt the full file. And it's quite common, actually. The modern ransomwares, they don't encrypt the full file for efficiency reasons, because they don't want to, or they don't need to, destroy the full file. They just need to make it unusable. They just need to render it unusable for, in this case, the ESXi daemon, the virtualization. And it turns out that, yeah, if you, you know, destroy about a third of the data, then for the most part, you cannot use your virtual disk image anymore. And there's another thing that you see, as you can see. It's the ciphertext. You see two blocks of ciphertext there. And these two blocks, they are the same. In fact, they are the very same. These are the very same bytes. So the input has been all zeros, and the encrypted ciphertext, the blocks, they look the very same throughout the file. The blocks that are encrypted, they follow a certain pattern. And through reverse engineering and experimentation, we find this pattern. And in fact, we're also not the first ones to find this. There has been a blog post by Zscaler in last December describing this pattern also to determine which blocks are encrypted. So we now know which part of the file, which parts of the file are encrypted. So we know where the ciphertext blocks are within the file, and it depends on the file size. The part we don't know yet is how the ciphertext is determined, and we will look at the ciphertext now. I will take a very brief one-slide detour into encryption and into the encryption that they use, the Black Bastard malware. They use a stream cipher, in particular XCHA20 is not so important, which stream cipher they actually use. They probably should have used an integrated cipher that does everything for them, but for efficiency reasons, they probably decided to do it themselves. And when you do it correctly, the proper way of using that, well, I mean, the most proper way is to just use an integrated cipher and don't care, take care of any of that, because the cipher will take care of it for you. But if you want to do it half manually, like they do, then you should probably generate a cipher stream, a key stream that is as long as the plain text that you want to encrypt. And then combine them with the XOR operation, and then you have a ciphertext. And of course, this is a very simplified depiction of how it looks like. You would XOR the actual blocks, right, of 64 bytes or whatever you have. You wouldn't XOR your gigabyte with another gigabyte. That would be silly. But it's just for depicting of how it would look like. What the malware does, instead of doing the correct thing, is they generate these random bytes, the key stream. And they use the same key stream for each and every chunk of the file. So they generate 64 bytes in the BlackBuster case. And they use these 64 bytes for each and every chunk that we have seen before, right? For the encrypted chunks of the file, they use these 64 bytes to XOR it onto the plaintext to generate the ciphertext. For the mathematically inclined, I've provided a simple formula down there. The ciphertext is the plaintext with a keystream, which is generally true. That's also true for them. The XOR operation means we can reverse we can rearrange the equation and get the keystream if and only if we know the plaintext. So the idea is, if we somehow manage to find plaintext in our encrypted file, which, I mean, at first seems silly, right? Because everything is encrypted. How would we know whether there's plaintext? But bear with me. I'll get onto that point very shortly. If we find some plaintext, then we can rearrange the equation, and we can get the key stream, take these 64 bytes in this case, apply it to all the encrypted chunks of the file, and recover everything. It would look like roughly like this. So we assume we have some plaintext from somewhere, either from a backup, right, because we have an earlier version of our database, and database are append only, so we have the first whatever chunk we have found in our backup, or we can regenerate because we know it's very structured, we can guess data maybe, or for some other reason we know these plaintext bytes, and if we know them, we can get hold of the keystream. With the keystream, we apply it to each and every chunk, and then we can decrypt the whole thing and have the plaintext. There's one case which makes this extremely easy. And this is the case for VMware disk images. Because they often contain stretches of 0 bytes, except if in the past you've written to each and every sector of your hard disk, which has not happened for us. So if you have some sectors that have not been written to of your virtual hard disk, then you may very well find plain zeros. Well, and then it's basically gratis. You basically get the keystream for free. You apply this keystream to all the other encrypted chunks of the file, and you recover the plaintext. This is quite good. The malware does this per file. So for every file to be encrypted, the malware creates a symmetric key and then does its encryption logic. So you would need to repeat this process for each and every file. The code that does the encryption through reverse engineering looks a bit like there in the upper right. We've verified this hypothesis that we've just presented by looking at the decompiled code. We see that they do indeed generate this key stream. They initialize it there in the first line. They use this key stream for the actual encryption of 64 bytes, right? There's the 64 in the upper right. And immediately thereafter, they discard this key stream, this Crypto++, relatively well-known library for doing cryptography. And they discard this key stream only to reinitialize, to recreate the very same thing for the next block. So it does indeed, use the very same 64 bytes. We can see it in the decompiled code. And, well, this allows for recovery, for recovering the file. The encryption, if I were to operate a ransomware, I would look for efficient solutions. The current way is not very efficient. They could be more performant by using less or fewer syscalls and more efficient ones like WriteV or pwriteV. There's many ways of doing this in Linux. And I alluded to their cryptography, their old cryptography before. So in before last, what did I say, last November, they used RSA-based encryption. So BlackBaster V1 used RSA for their encryption, and that worked beautifully. That was good. That was in no way vulnerable as far as we know for the moment. Once they changed to elliptic curve cryptography, they introduced this bug. So by refactoring, they somehow screwed up a comment or a line or we don't know exactly what, which renders the whole thing vulnerable to this attack. We go on to demonstrate the actual decryption. Is not too interesting, maybe. We see the two files, the original and the encrypted one, and we see the differences. It's these encrypted blocks looking the same in each and every chunk. And we, in this case, we decompress the archive with the tools. We run this tool, this automatic tool, which does not work as automatically as it could. Needs some values. The footer, I mentioned the 314 bytes in the end of the file. We want to make sure we only touch really malware encrypted bytes. They're malware encrypted files. So we copy and paste the suggestion. It runs faster and more reliable than the original decryptor that you can find on malware bytes. And then you can see that the files are indeed the same. If so, it calculates the correct hash sum, checksum. So the file does indeed contain all zeros. Is it all good? Well, many things are good, is not 100% good. There are a few rough edges. You may remember the encrypted chunks, the parts of the file that are encrypted. And if the file is less than 5,000 bytes, then they use the full key stream. Then we cannot recover anything. So small files, we cannot recover. Files up to a gigabyte, they work for us perfectly. If the file is any bigger, then the first 5,000 bytes are encrypted as in the way before, so we cannot recover them, but the rest works as expected. I will mention it now before I forget. In case of the VMware disk images, the first 5,000 bytes are not too much of a problem. At least they haven't been for us in the past, because the file systems on these disks, they typically tend to start way into the disk, a couple of kilobytes into the disk. So the first 5,000 bytes are usually not too important. Also, because while the structures in the 5,000 bytes are important, the boot sector and the partition table and everything, you can regenerate those. By having the rest of the disk, you know, the partition layout, you can regenerate the partition table, bootloaders are for free, you can just install a new one. So throwing the first 5,000 bytes away has not been too much of a problem for us. For disk images. The timing looks almost like this. So BlackBaster appears at the beginning of last year. They changed their cryptography at the end of last year. Zscaler describes this new variant. We started looking at BlackBaster because we're curious. And once we've verified what we were seeing, things that we couldn't believe having found ourselves, we started sharing everything we knew with the victims and with the law enforcement and with incident responders. And now we're here presenting it to the public, hoping to save many victims from paying the ransom. We are well aware that this is not lighthearted, say, because by publishing everything now, the criminals will surely patch their code. We assume anyway, maybe not. And we do so anyway because we know that the holiday season is a tough time for organizations. It is a high time, actually, for these breaches. And we hope to prevent their business, to drive their business down. And it's also, having something in public now makes it more easy to talk about, also for the victims. We've approached the victims, and believe it or not, the response rate was very low. But also not too surprising, knowing victims, they get those messages, they get many of those messages like, oh, nice infrastructure, you seem to have a problem, we can help you. Wouldn't it be nice if you took our zip file here, please open it. It's difficult. Having something now makes it hopefully more credible and hopefully, makes organizations believe that they do not have to pay the ransom. We just, earlier today, just a couple of minutes actually ago, everything has been put on GitHub, so you can go there and get the code and hopefully decrypt all your files, because we also know that some organizations, they keep the encrypted data for, well, moments like these, when a decryptor becomes available, so they can recover the data that they need for whatever reason. So, to conclude the decryption part, we need 64 bytes of plain text. These need to come from somewhere. The zeros are the easy case. We can even detect them heuristically with the tool that we've implemented. But if you have 64 bytes from somewhere else, well, that would also work. But if we don't have 64 bytes, then unfortunately we cannot do anything. Bigger files tend to be problematic. In the case of disk images, it's not too much of a problem. Being able to decrypt the encrypted files is good, but not having to is even better. Remember the common playbook of these cyber criminals, the typical way of compromise, say. We know that many organizations are well aware that their maturity is not as good as it could or should be. And again, it's most likely easier to invest up front rather than pay up later. So just hopefully convincing some people to start taking IT security seriously before it costs real money. A few suggestions on how to not become a victim of ransomware is addressing these typical, say, path in the compromise. So you could work with whitelisting applications, only running signed code. And in particular, for these common ransomware path, you may want to have a very close look at your PowerShell configuration to not allow each and everything. You may well want to scan your exposure, because many things are publicly known. Let me rephrase it. Some people have found the attacker's infrastructure and know how they operate, and they use Shodan APIs just like anybody else can. So you can do it yourself, and you can, you know, scan your infrastructure from the public internet to see how exposed you are. And then hopefully have a proper patch management to patch all your vulnerabilities. And it's probably smart to do it based on criticality, but not necessarily on technical criticality, but on how critical it is for your operations. We've talked about ESXi. VMware has actually released quite an extensive set of documentation for maintaining security on your ESXi installations. But it applies to every other part of your infrastructure as well, of course. If you manage to have a decent privileged access management so that the attackers do not get from a user account to domain administrator in 20 minutes, then you're already good. You may want to have dedicated accounts that raise alarms when used, so that your monitoring goes crazy if a dedicated account has been breached, so that you know that something is not good. And, well, it sounds trivial, but backups help, right? No backup, no pity. Everybody knows that. And funnily enough, organizations have backups, but it's actually not backups that you want. You want restore. So it's important to actually test the restore, and not only test whether restoration works, but whether it's complete. And also whether you can restore in time, especially if you have internet-based backups. It's good to have offsite backups and not pay other organizations to do the offsite backups for you. But have your own offsite backups, but be able to restore them in time that your business can tolerate. And I want to close and open the floor for questions. The very quick one slide summary of everything is that ransomware is and remains a severe threat since 2014 or 16. It causes billions and billions of damage. in Germany alone, right? 200 million, billions of damage in, alone in Germany. So, I mean, in the other countries you have to add as well. Is organized crime. We know that the ransomware gangs, they operate in a very separated fashion, say. So one section is the customer service, the other section does the technical infrastructure for them, the other section does the actual malware, and so they have jobs in their organization, and just like any other well-organized criminal business. It used to be very active in Germany, not as much anymore now, given the very latest figures. They use cryptography, they want to be efficient. They're a bit too efficient. If they had used a proper integrated cipher, then that would not have happened to them. They reuse this very same key stream. Is a very bad idea. Do not reuse the same key multiple times. It breaks their neck. It allows us to recover files encrypted with their malware. You can go get all our tools from GitHub. There is the URL. And again, take backups, test them, and try to not fall victim to ransomware in the first place. Thanks.
That was a fantastic round of applause. Can we do one more for Tobias? Great, so we have time for questions. Those of you in the room, you see there are four microphones, 1, 2, 3, and 4, whatever the actual order is. Of course, we're also taking questions on the internet. We're monitoring Matrix, IRC, as well as Mastodon. The hashtag for this room is 37C3 Granville, and the IRC channel is 37C3-Hall-Granville. First question.
Thanks for the wonderful talk. So you've shown how symmetric cryptography is being used for encrypting the files. So what is RSA and ECC being used for?
Right. So I've shown the very brief summary of how that all that works. The details are in the Zscaler blog. They create a symmetric key per file and encrypt that symmetric key asymmetrically with a per victim key. So that's where the asymmetric cryptography like the RSA or the ECC comes into play. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks.
I have to chase you a bit.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. All right, I see in the back we have also a question.
Yeah, thank you very much for your work and your talk. I actually encountered a ransomware case with Blackbusters this month and got your script from the police.
Oh, really? That's fantastic. Good.
Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't use them because the service provider already deleted all of the encrypted files, so I couldn't test it. but yeah, what I encountered in my cases is that the encryption is not what matters the most anymore, because most of the companies I work with have backups and restore them, but they are willing to pay because of the blackmailing that happens.
In around the publication.
Maybe is there some, or maybe they do not focus on the encryption so much because they say, okay, we have encrypted and the files do not look usable anymore. It's more important that we did something in their systems and have the files on our side, and so they focus more on evacuation, etc. Is that you already, you also have?
We have also seen that, yes. And I guess that's due to them trying to be efficient, like the gangsters. I mean, they skip the encryption part for reasons we don't necessarily know. Maybe if they're listening now on the stream, maybe they can comment on the internet. But I mean, well, what can I say? You should probably monitor your network traffic. If you suddenly transmit 3 terabytes a day, maybe something is weird. And hooray to Germany for being able to transmit 3 terabytes in a day.
So it seems they may have hacked into our projectors. But while we're looking at that up front.
If they have such good infrastructure and produce so much damages, why is it so hard to really catch those groups and destroy them? They get even bigger and bigger. Should it be not become easier?
Well, so from what I've read, some crews, they reside in certain countries where it's not directly illegal to hack, you know, into foreign countries' computers, and international collaboration with certain countries is become a more difficult thing, at least as of about 2 years now.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I understand.
So up front here on the other side.
Hey.
Please. Yeah.
So the question is, if you're aware that at least that of as of December 18th, Blockbuster fixed the crypto flaws that you mentioned, means the newest version is unbreakable, means your presentation is no longer accurate, and the details and help that you try to provide to the victims will be no longer accurate. And that's a serious question, and a colleague of mine and of many of the other people in this room inform us that it was first seen at December 18th, that they did fix the flaws that you're talking about.
Oh, you mean like 5 days ago?
18th. It wasn't five.
Oh, like 9 days ago then?
Yeah.
Well, we're not aware of that. If you can provide samples, we're more than happy to be looking at them.
You can find the samples by yourself on the internet.
Well.
So we still have time for a couple of questions. I'd ask you to keep them questions and not commentary. Do we have any questions from the internet? We do.
Yeah, we do. The internet says, thank you for your talk. And we have a couple of questions. Let's start with the first one. Depending on the encryption, the question is, is the key stream used for the first 5,000 bytes initialized with different values than the 64-byte key stream for greater than 1 gigabyte files? And if no, couldn't you decrypt the first 64 bytes of those files as well?
Yes, well observed. I'm proud. That's correct, but well, it was too difficult for me to put in with a didactic, say, methodology that I'm lacking, so I did not say that the first 64 bytes could indeed be recovered.
All right, we have time for one long question or two short questions. I'm looking in the back right. Is it a long question or a short question? A little question, okay. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wondered, you said that you need 64 bytes, so did you look into whether it's feasible for well-known file formats like JPEG or other stuff, if you can do that automatically?
Right, it's a very good point. It is somewhat possible. So far, we have not found enough structure in common file formats to do that, but in principle, you're right. If we had file formats that have fixed structures, fixed bytes in place, then yes, we could use those.
Thanks.
And we don't need 64 because we can, you know, brute force some and make educated guesses. We have not done that yet, but it's on GitHub. I invite you to send patches.
All right. Do we have one short question from the internet? It'll be the last one.
It's more of a political question. So you talked about preventing ransomware, and wouldn't be a possibility to disallow paying the ransom or to force companies to publicly announce if they have been ransomed? Would that make a difference? Do you have any input on that?
Ooh. The short answer is no, but I would be happy to discuss this at the bar just hereafter. Of course, that's difficult with the colleague on the internet, but if anybody else wants to find me at the bar outside, I'd be more than happy to be talking about it.
Thank you so much, Tobias. Can we get another final round of applause for Tobias?